Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
They're finally here, over highway and trail. My goody good glasses arrived in the mail. I think I shall wear them, with style and with glee, and walk around town to see what I see. I start noticing things that I did not before, like that mess that I made over there on the floor. I know it's so easy to just walk away, but someone might trip, unless they know ballet. Oh look! Oh no! It's my good friend Gord Jim! That box that he's moving is filled past the brim. I offer to help him lift some of his freight. He smiles and is thankful to bear lesser weight. What's this now? I've never seen Junior so glum. Could it be that his feelings were hurt by someone? What's wrong? I ask him. Do you need a friend? I do, he replies, and his heart starts to mend. There's another good thing that I'd like to do, to share my goody good glasses with you. I no longer need them to do goody things, 'cause I now see the joy that doing good brings.
Rick Osborne is a best-selling author and speaker committed to encouraging and equipping Christian parents to raise their kids God's way. For the last 20 years, he's been teaching Christian parents how to get the job done through his books and seminars. Today, we're going to talk with Rick about the book he co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman, A Perfect Pet for Peyton. It's based on Gary's highly successful book, The Five Love Languages. In the VeggieTales clip you heard, Larry the Cucumber illustrates three of the five love languages we'll talk about. Larry offers to help a friend, an act of service. He gives words of encouragement for Junior, who's down in the dumps, and free glasses, gift giving, to all his veggie pals. How important is it to teach kids about how to give and receive love? Stay tuned to find out. Rick, welcome to Heartline.
Hey, Rita, it's great to be here.
Start us out by telling us what the five love languages are for those people who may not be familiar with them.
Well, Dr. Chapman has done a great job of identifying that all of us tend to speak in one of the different five love languages, and they're acts of service, quality time, words of affirmation, gifts, and touch.
Mm. And so why is it important, and why are they important to teach our kids?
Well, it's important to, I guess the main thing is it's important to teach our kids to love. When we raise our kids, there's a handful of things that are really, really important to teach them. And we tend to run around taking them to lessons and taking them here and teaching them a lot of different things. But, I mean, love, the two greatest commandments, love God, love others. I mean, relationship, that's the foundation of who we are and, what we do in this life. So it gives them a big head start to teach them how to love. And I think that Dr. Chapman's system for breaking it down into these languages is a very simple, practical way of teaching kids how to love. Not just yelling from the other room, hey, can't you get along? but actually, sitting with them and teaching them. And it's a great head start.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I use them in counseling all the time with people. I think it's a really good way to introduce the whole needs piece for them. And so they, meaning the love languages, are critically important because how we give and receive love is different for a lot of people. And if you're married to someone, for example, who loves gifts, and that's the bottom of the bag for you, you like to hear words of encouragement, you can see how people get really crisscrossed in trying to think they're ministering to their spouse and they're just totally off base.
Oh, absolutely. My wife is a physical touch, and I'm gifts.
Really?
So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of, it's quite different. And, but knowing that really, really helps, you know.
Yeah.
Really
and, helps. And especially to teach kids on the front end, you can't start too young. So do you think it's important for parents to know their kids' love language?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, kids learning to love, the first line of defense for learning anything is the example that you have. Kids are learning from their parents and what they do. And, of course, you know, with a topic like love, we're definitely learning by example because we first need to be loved so we can see what that's like before we learn how to do it. So when parents know their kids' love language, they're able to, you know, identify exactly how to show love to their children. And when that love is being shown, the children are getting it. And that's an awesome thing.
Yeah, especially for kids who need, like, words of encouragement. You know, I know in the olden days, parents used to, like, use this reverse psychology. Well, I'm not going to praise them. I'm going to, you know, just tell them, you know, it's reverse psychology. And
right.
Then that kid is starved for words of encouragement and grows up thinking that, you know, he or she isn't valuable or is a loser or whatever.
Exactly. And that's not the way that we want to go. I mean, the worst thing you can do, you know, love languages work in the opposite. So if somebody's got their love language is touch, the worst thing you can do is not touch them.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's just the reverse psychology does not work at all.
No. Did you know Gary before this project, and how did he feel about having a cartoon of himself?
It was a wonderful opportunity, actually, that the publisher, Gary, had this vision, and he had a ton of parents come up to him and say, hey, how can I teach this to my kids? And he'd always go away from those conversations saying, I don't know how to do that. I don't write for kids. I don't know how to, you know, teach this, but I really want to. And finally, he talked to the publisher about it. The publisher knew me, and he put the two of us together, and it just came out of that. And you know what? Gary is a real joy to work with when it came to the cartoon character. He just laughed. He thought it was a great idea. He thought it was funny, and he played along with it. He was probably, if I pushed it a little further even, and he would have been okay with it, but he's great to work with.
Awesome. You teach kids the love languages through the different animals in the story. Tell us more about that.
Well, we have five main characters. We've got Peyton and Penny. They're twins. And it's we're celebrating their birthday, and they get a surprise party. And they have three friends that come along with them. So we have five kids. And, of course, each one of the kids has a different love language. And the Dr. Chapman in the story is the owner of the Pet Pal Emporium. And one of the reasons why this place is so incredible and the kids love it so much is you don't just get a pet there. He always matches the kids up with the perfect pet. And the perfect pet is a pet that shows the same love language as the person has. So in the story, we see these kids and we see them having a great time because the Pet Pal Emporium is also kind of like, you know, a Disneyland and a pet store rolled into one. And it's just this great big place with rides and, you know, they're having a big birthday party and pizza. So they're having a great time. But while they're doing that, in the story, we're seeing what the kids' love languages are, how they show love and how they receive love. And then when Dr. Chapman explains the love languages and matches them up with a pet, I mean, the kids are just beside themselves. And it's a great way of teaching kids the love languages.
So how can parents key in on this? Like, say, you know, maybe an example from the story. Like, how do you tell what bent your kid would have to, say, needing gifts or words of encouragement?
Well, first of all, the whole love language thing is so innate in the story. We spent quite a bit of time going over that and over it, keeping it really simple, fun, exciting. You know, everyone who's read it so far is giving it 5 stars out of 5 stars. It's that way. But we made sure that just by reading the story and seeing each kid and their example, that you would automatically get it. I love the fact that we've had people comment on the different reviews and everything from the book, that they'd heard about the five love languages. They'd even been through the book, but they really got it when they read the kids' book.
Oh, that's great. It's really great. Simple.
Exactly. So it's so innate in the story that parents and kids get it. And then if that weren't enough, at the back of the book, there's an actual quiz that the parents can take their kids through to figure out, you know, what the kids' love language
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because the questions really help to zero in on a dominant love language, you know, in each category. So how do parents discern which love language is dominant from their kids' answers?
Well, actually, what I've found and what Gary Chapman has found is that kids with this book tend to want to identify themselves, just like we're the best at identifying our own love language.
Mm-hmm.
So kids are as well. And when they get this simple, innate story where it's innate in the actual story, kids want to say that identify this is who I am,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to identify with a pet and character and point out and say this is what I think I am. And we actually encourage the parents to be soft with the test and not, you know, identify it themselves, the love language themselves, and push it, but to, you know, start talking to their children about it and then take them through the quiz and, you know, take them through another part of the quiz and do it slowly. And the kids get it themselves. That's one of the wonderful things about the love languages in this book.
Mm. Now, is 4 years old too young to know your love language? When can we start with this?
Oh, no. 4 years old is definitely not too young. I think it depends on the child, you know, and their awareness, their ability to sit down and listen to the story. I mean, some kids could be six and, you know, not want to sit down and get through the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it depends on the child. But, wow, the earlier the better, because when they start understanding, first and foremost, the parent is understanding love languages and how to communicate that to their child in their love and in their language and their everyday life. So it starts there. So even if the child is younger, it's good because the parent is starting. But then, you know, the child gets it and slowly but surely moves up and is receiving love and then starts to learn to give that love.
Mm. The key concept of Dr. Chapman's love languages is that everyone receives love in a unique manner, but showing love to others in their own love language is a selfless and lifelong lesson. And so how does the story of Peyton bring that down for, say, 4 to 8 year olds?
Well, what happens is, again, as they're reading the story and as they learn that this is my love language and everyone has a different love language, well, that's the next step is, okay, I want people to love me. I want people to speak my love language. If that's acts of service, you know, I want people to do acts of service to me. And the nice thing about kids is what they also get is that when they've been doing acts of service, they realize that they're showing love. And you sort of get that echo where they're going, wow, this is what I'm doing, because they're doing it naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But the next step out of that is kids learning, well, wow, my mom has a different love language. My sister has a different love language. I need to, just like I want somebody to do an act of service for me, I need to make sure that, you know, I'm giving words of affirmation to my sister. And it's a very easy leap from the book for parents to continue in, you know, the daytime and during sibling relationships, and when a flare-up happens or whatever, for the parents to come alongside and start talking to their kids about, well, okay, Susie's love language is, and what should we do here? And it's just a great tool for that.
Oh, it is. And so parents can really expand on this idea and use it as a teaching tool for developing, you know, these virtues in their kids.
Oh, exactly. I mean, we've already heard from some larger families that, you know, have gone through the book and identified all their kids' different love languages and the parents as well, and then, you know, put it up on the fridge as a reminder to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, now they're starting to talk into that right from the fridge whenever there's a situation or whenever there's an opportunity to show love. The parents are using that to talk into the situation and build their children up and make their family a more loving, more wonderful place to be.
Absolutely. I just love the whole idea. What are some of the special features that have been incorporated into the book?
Oh, this
they've got so many cute things. I was just looking at it again last night.
Yeah, this is one of the really fun things about this book. It's not just a story. The artist Wilson Williams, J. Jr. He has done an amazing job of this art, and it is so detailed. On one level, you go through and you read the story, and the kids love it. Then you go back through it, and they're in this, like I said, you know, Disneyland meets a pet store. They're in this massive place with all these wonderful animals, and like a zoo as well. And the pages are just full of these animals, either out in the open or hidden. And the animals are drawn, you know, fun, but they're not cartoon, but they're accurate enough that they're similar to or the same looking as the animals, so that the kids and the parents can start naming and identifying the animals. And they're all listed there at the bottom or the side of the page or whatever. So it starts to be not only a hunt, but it starts to be a way that parents can use this book to help their kids know what these different animals are. And that's one of the features. There's also we put an insect, because there's an insect room in the Emporium, a creepy crawler room. creepy crawler room. And we put an insect hidden in every page, and that says at the front of the book. Well, when I first started, you know, handing this book and showing it to friends and family of mine and everything like that, one of the first things the adults would do is take the book and start looking all the way through, trying to find the bug in every spread.
that would be me.
What is with that? It's like, wow, great book, great artwork. I'm going to find the bug.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of little things like that that make the book even more engaging. And why do we do that? We did it to make the book have more life, so that it's not just, you know, I want to read it a couple of times and then we forget about this, because the lesson is too big for that. The fact that this needs to be learned and learned over a period of time is too big for that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these little features, and it's working from all the reports that we're getting, the kids want to go back and back and back and back, not only for the story, but for all of these features and for the quality time that it creates between the parent and the child, because they're spending time together with all these activities and inside this book, which gives opportunity for us to, again, or the parents again, to talk about love languages.
Yeah. And if your love language is quality time, what a great thing. 100
exactly.
of those books. Yeah. What has your grandkids' response been to this book? You have grandchildren.
I do. My grandkids, my oldest grandchild, she just loves it, Kieran. She thinks it's amazing. And of course, we knew what her love language is. I knew what her love language is. It's whenever I show up, it's, Granddad, come into my room. I got something to show you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or climbing up on my knee. Where's your iPad, Granddad?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's definitely quality time. She wants to spend time with me.
Yeah, so is mine.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and, so this is going to be a great gift for my granddaughter.
Exactly. So what you identified is, you get a double whammy with a child that's quality time, because you're reading the book about it and also spending quality time with them, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And she just loves the book. And it's amazing how she started to identify with the child in the book that was in quality time, who is Penny. She started to identify with Penny from the first read, from the first time through. And that, to me, showed that, you know, that what we're doing here is really working in it. And it's not just innate in the book. It's natural. It's innate. It's built into us. And children just, they get it. They know. They understand. This is who I am.
Yeah.
And they start to, you know, attach themselves to that and start using it and learning. And it's really neat to watch.
Yeah, and it's neat to be able to say, this is what I need. You know, because a lot of people are afraid to, have grown up being afraid to ask for what they need.
Well, exactly. And now they the whole idea of, you know, mom or dad or granddad or Baba, I need to spend time with you is great. We all know what she's saying, and she knows what she's saying.
Mm-hmm. You've been writing children's books for a long time. What was different about creating this story?
Well, I always, every kid's book that I write, I always try to, it's because I write parenting books as well. And so what I try to do is teach the parents, help the parents know what to do, and then give them a tool, you know, in the kid's books that actually works, so that they can teach this to the children. It's one thing, you need to teach your children this, and this is how you do it. It's another thing to actually put a tool in their hand. And I discovered many years ago that books are great tools for doing this. Stories are a great vehicle for this. But with this book, just this message, you know, I've been involved in lots of really great messages, but this message, which is love, which I come back to again, I'm a very relational person. And loving God and loving others, that's the foundation. I like to say that everything else in life beyond that is sets and props.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about relationships. And this Dr. Chapman has got such an inspired, wonderful way of helping us learn love. And to be able to take that wonderful system that he developed over years and be able to put it into a book for families is just, it's a real blessing.
Yeah. So when your publisher got you guys hooked up, was it you that actually came up with the story?
Yeah, I here's the thing. This was kind of funny. When I first got the invitation and the request, are you willing to do this? My first response was, I'm way too busy. My first response was, no, I don't, you know, I can't do this right now. And you know, my wife, knowing the five love languages and really loving the concept, you know, wives are such wonderful, wonderful people to have with you.
Mm-hmm. They keep you on point, don't they?
Exactly. She says, dear, shouldn't you at least pray about this?
Mm-hmm. That might be well, a good, when all else fails, pray about it.
I said, well, of course I should. So I started to pray about it. And I'll tell you what, within about 60 seconds of beginning to pray about this topic, the idea was already there. And I went, I think I'm making time for this book.
That's
and
awesome.
Then I'm really glad I did, because as we got into it, it was almost like the book was there and it unfolded itself to us as a team. And it was wonderful, and everyone enjoyed working on it and loved the fact that this was going to be teaching kids such an important lesson.
Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear people say that kids' books can be the most difficult to do well because a child's attention span is really short. How did you and Gary make such a deep concept so interesting outside of everything we've talked about?
Well, I think it's, again, one of the features that we put in the book is relationships. I mean, it doesn't say that anywhere in the book. It doesn't scream out, you know, we don't tell them relationships are important, you know, in great big letters across the pages. But in every relationship, in every personal interaction, every single one of them in a book where anyone's talking and anyone else is involved, I mean, we're actually exampling relationship. We're exampling the love language. We're exampling through the story kindness and the way that we should, and consideration and the way that we should treat each other. So again, here's something that here's a fun story. And they're reading about this fun story and all these different characters, and each character is obviously quite different and has their different quirks and personality. But we see, and the kids see, each character relating and interacting with the other in a way that's an example to them. And wow, that is just another layer that makes this a powerful teaching tool. The kids having a lot of fun reading the story and finding the bugs and doing all these wonderful things and identifying with the characters and thinking through their love language. But at the same time, the examples in the stories, and we know one of my pet peeves is that sometimes, well, not sometimes, a lot of times I go to the bookstore and I, you know, either purchase or go through right there at the time and see, you know, what's happening, what books are coming out. And there's a trend in children's books where, you know, the example that the story gives is not the example we want to be teaching kids. And sometimes at the end of the book, you know, it sort of wraps it up. Well, this is what we learned and this is what we shouldn't do anymore. And what we're missing there when we're writing those kind of kids' books is that kids they're not listening to the 10% at the end where the lesson comes in.
Mm-hmm.
They're watching the example the 90% of the time. That's the powerful thing. They're watching that child misbehave for 90% of the book.
That's a great point.
We read that book to that child over and over again and wondering why they're misbehaving. They're not getting the lesson. They get it from the example. So in this book, what we're doing is it's right there in the example. And you find, or parents are finding, you finish reading the book a couple times, just from reading the book already, there's a change in the way that your child is treating your other child, just from the example. So, yeah, I mean, again, layering it in, layering this book, it seems, back to your question, that was a while ago, sorry.
That's great. No, this was a great point.
But layering in this book the different ways of being able to teach. So it seems like a simple book. It seems like, well, it's a kid's book. How hard can that be? But because of all of these different layers and the amount of times we went over it to make it a great piece of literature, to make it a great read, to make it a wonderful story, but then also to teach by example, to teach through the story, to teach the five love languages, and do that all in a wonderful way that really helps children, that makes it more difficult. It also makes it more rewarding. So.
Oh, sure. Well, can you give us a practical example of how parents can use everyday life to continue to instill these principles into their kids? I mean, like with a love language.
Well, I think what I was just talking about earlier and is a great, once you've taken your kids through it, like that one lady did, she wrote everyone's love language is down and then put the paper on the fridge. I think that's a great example. First of all, it's a great example to mom or to dad or whoever's putting that up on the fridge, a reminder to make sure that the parent, first and foremost, is identifying the love languages of the love language of each child and making an effort.
Rick, thank you so much. I mean, we could talk about this all day. How can folks get copies of the books? I'm going to be giving away a copy of The Perfect Pet for Peyton to the best comment that comes across on my website from this interview. So we'd love to hear from everybody out there. Go to the contact page on my website at ritaschulte.com. But Rick, on your end, I mean, I'm sure you can get it in bookstores or through Amazon.
Yep, through Amazon, through all the online bookstores and a bookstore near you.
What about contacting you if people have any questions or comments?
That would be rick-osborne.com.
Thank you so much for being with us today. This was wonderful. Blessings to all your projects.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.